We could be having times like having my face like, oh, just one more point. And I'm like, we're getting very close. We're getting very close.
Manager Quinn was like about to come in and be like, so we're going to put that one in the parking lot, McBain.
I just want to point out that we've scheduled the meeting to end at 9:25 so we can only get to our next meetings. And so I really want to put a pin in this.
It's added take to the it offline for next week.
There's only 4 spells in my deck, less than 3 CMC. Abuse a London Mall to start with all the cards that I need. Main deck in 12 pitch spells, so I've got more free counters than you. Making an ardent plea on turn 2-2, cascade into a big planeswalker. Cosmic imposter, and I still run no go to. But it's strand out, fetching a mountain. Elvish guide, I'm pitching for green. Pitch monkey to cast an outburst. Deal up an hammer, falls on me. And if you're holding on to Hydroblast, will you still die? I'll cast a misdirection back at you, make you wanna cry.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the legacy podcast that's still cascading into ancestral visions. My name's Quinn Omori. I'm here as always with, oh, Jeff, no laugh, just a shrug.
I'm holding it. I can't commit to that.
I'm here with my co-host, Jeff Kinsey.
Hey, Quinn.
And Brendan McBain.
Hey, Quinn. Hey, Jeff.
And we're joined by a very special guest all the way from Brisbane, Australia. You may know him as Dukes on Twitch or from the greensunzenith.com. Dukes, thanks for joining us, man. How's it going?
Hey, Quinn. Hey, Jeff. Hey, McBain. It's going well. Really happy to be on the podcast. Yeah, Brisbane, Australia is in a pretty good spot at the moment with the COVID and just weather in general and legacy as well, which is good. So yeah, can't really complain.
Nice. So, yeah, I guess it's summer down there too, right? Or like tail end of summer?
Yeah, tail end of summer coming into autumn, but still pretty hot, getting sort of the average about 30 a day, 30 degrees that is.
Oh yeah, Celsius, we're on board. Fahrenheit. Let's go, Celsius squad.
we're the Commonwealth, we get it.
Yeah, that's true.
So we got Dukes on. We're going to talk about legacy in Australia, talk about kind of like some, you know, what's been happening pre-COVID, post-COVID. Before we do that, Jeff, you want to clean some house?
Yes, it's very trim. And as usual, I don't know if these are actually going to be out with enough time. So there's the Lotus Box Octagon started up again. This one definitely is going to happen before the podcast comes out. I think on Thursday this week is the Legacy Octagon. Hopefully they run it like weekly again, so keep your eyes open. And then Saturday, February 13th at 7:00 in the morning Pacific time, there is a Legacy qualifier on Magic Online. No god accounts for this one. And that's everything I could find scouring the internet. House is clean.
House is clean. Are you planning on playing on the February 13th?
I don't think so. Like, Legacy does not look appealing enough for me to like seriously compete right now.
I think there's that, and then there's just the fact that Daniel Gochel is just going to win again. So I don't know if it's really worth showing up.
Just shifting my credit from Vancouver to Toronto.
Yeah.
You play the Velky deck.
It's also, on top of that, it's like 1,200 tickets to rent or something. Elliot was looking at it. It's extremely expensive because it's 4 forces of negations. It's crazy. It's very expensive.
Maybe that's Magic why they online sweet spot right now, where if you crack, like if you draft, well, the mythics are worth like 2 times your draft.
Valky's 100 tickets.
Oh wow. I might get online after this.
No, but it's like Valky, and then if you don't hit that, everything's like, I was looking the other day, it's like 8 tickets is the next one. Anyway, not the Magic Finance podcast.
So that's the housekeeping, which means we can move on, I think, to the main event, what everybody's here for. Dukes, hello.
Hey, Jeff.
So thank you for joining us here. Really, we, you know, as the foremost Australian fan of our Twitch streams, I think we really just wanted to bring you on and talk about Australia, legacy, Eternal, anything else that's going on.
Yeah, cool. Well, I guess we started the ground roots. I'm from Brisbane in Queensland, and we've had a pretty good local legacy scene for, I'm going to say at least a decade. Our highest attendance has probably been for the weeklies, probably in the around 2015, 2016 was around 35 to 40 people a week,
right,
which is really good. We have multiple stores that we're running events, but obviously with the legacy scene in regards to players, most can only attend maybe one a week. So it was kind of just that one Tuesday night every week that was going off. And I guess, yeah, with the format changing, players getting older, more commitments to them as well outside of Magic, that numbers have dipped off. But luckily through things like COVID, we've been in a pretty good spot with about 15 players a week. So it's been that's really like, nice. It's like just right a break now? Every week to come out and play Legacy.
Yeah. Like tonight, Tuesday night?
Tonight for me is Wednesday night, which is the shit. New Legacy. no, all good. But yeah, like going strong, have a good core group of people, which is nice. And you can always rely on them to rock up. So that's really good. And then we have a few people that have Lender decks, which is awesome. So if anyone wants to try out the format, we've got a pretty good modern scene. So there are people who are looking to get into Legacy. And obviously with the cost as a pretty big barrier, it's really good to have, you know, spare decks for people to lend and try out the format. And then, yeah, I guess, you know, Melbourne has a really good Eternal scene as well. Obviously there's also Canberra with CBR MTG, which are a group of content creators that do a lot of legacy content and 7.0 Highlander content. And then there's Adelaide Eternal, which is from Victoria, from South Australia, who do a lot for the Eternal scene down there. The big events in Australia are probably the Melbourne Eternal Weekend, which is usually around the Queen's birthday mid-year, over a three-day long weekend, which features Legacy, Vintage, and Highlander. Mm-hmm. And Adelaide are looking to do something similar. And we are, of course, looking to do that as well. We've done it in the past, but sometimes numbers have been a little bit topsy-turvy. And then I guess as well on the West Coast, there's Perth, which also has a really strong scene within Legacy and also Highlander. A lot of key sort of group individuals that are pushing that, which is good. But other than, I don't know too much about Tasmania or Northern Territory, but if you're in a capital city in Australia, you can probably find Legacy at least once a week, which is pretty awesome.
I'm impressed because if anybody asked me to name what the Legacy scene looks like in our entire country, I would have no goddamn idea. I do have one question about the Eternal Weekends. How much notice do you get for those Eternal Weekends? Because if it's more than a week, is it really like an Eternal Weekend?
Yeah, that's true. So I guess the Eternal Weekends in Australia are just the three-day long periods, which is tough as well because it's hard to find long weekends that match with every state because we have different public holidays. So you're not always going to have the keen travelers from other states open on the same weekends. But Melbourne's definitely the one that's been around the longest and has allowed the most amount of players to kind of recognize that it is the biggest and to make time for that weekend.
That's awesome. How big do those get, do you know?
They get pretty big. I think the last one that we did in 2019 had about, I'm going to say maybe 50 for Legacy, maybe 40 for Vintage, and maybe like 65 for Highlander.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
So pretty strong numbers for a little country like Oz.
Yeah.
But we have a really good community sort of, I guess, statewide. I'm part of like a state championship group where we have one person from each state looking after kind of, I guess, legacy in their towns. And usually when a GP was on, we would set up a state championship where each state would bring six of their best players to a LGS the Friday night before a GP was in the city, and would play it out for sort of state champs for Legacy.
That's
as teams
sick.
Of three. which is cool. And then in the finals, the teams of six would actually battle it out as 6-on-6, which is kind of cool. And then we'd just go for food or beers after. And then you kind of know everyone throughout the GP weekend, which is really nice. So you get to see faces that you otherwise wouldn't have known about.
That's awesome.
That's, to me, that's so different than how Canada is. Like, maybe it's the fact that we're horizontally spread out across a longer distance, whereas you're more like, I don't know, like a big triangle or something, like a big square, where you're distant from each other, but at the same time, you're all kind of equally distant from each other. I like going into this, like we are partially.
The East State definitely has a really good relationship because we're all so close, but with WA, it's a little bit further away, but those guys are pretty keen to travel. They've been in lockdown for a little while. So I know that they were kind of sniffing around to see if there was an Eternal Weekend happening maybe at the end of this year in Australia. And I think there was about 20 of them that were pretty keen just to fly wherever they had to play some Eternal Weekend legacy.
I think it's everybody after this year, especially like North America. Like if it's a GP anywhere, like Vegas, Toronto, you know, New York, like I think any of us are going immediately.
Yeah, exactly. I guess one thing that's nice as well is that I know that GPs obviously don't have too much legacy action other than side events. So for 2019, we had a GP in Brisbane, which is awesome. So it was a home GP. And we actually reached out to Channel Fireball and said, hey, Australia's got a really good legacy scene. We would really like it on the Friday to have like a state championships with like a trophy and like maybe try to make it like 5 or 6 rounds and they cut to top 8, and they were on board and they did it, which is awesome. So we got a trophy done up. I think we had about 50 or 60 players in it. And I actually took a laptop and a tripod with a webcam and filmed the quarters, the semis and the finals, which is pretty cool.
That's awesome.
But I have yet to upload it. I have it already. We've done the commentary. I just got to go through it and like do the niggling of the updating of like life totals as you go through it.
Extremely tedious work.
Yeah, but really cool because, I think it was pretty awesome to see Channel Fireball were pretty open to it. They've done it in the past where they've picked up that 7-point Highlander is a really big format in Australia. So they've started doing Friday events for that as well, where I think the first one we had just under 100 people, which is pretty great. And those definitely go off. They're probably the most lucrative event for Eternal players in Australia right now.
So I want to, I guess, shift a little bit. Let me know, everybody, if you want me to stop. But 7-point Highlander, this is something I've heard about, but I don't really know anything about. I know we have, Canadian Highlander. That's the name of it, right? Canadian Highlander out here. And it's mostly.
We have the better Highlander because it's Canadian, and it's homegrown in British Columbia. But yeah, I don't know anything about the 7-point Highlander. Is the council all based in Australia? Do they give the points? Like, could you give us a little bit of a briefing?
Yeah. So 7-point Highlander is run, I guess, by the community and also a committee of, I believe, 5 people around the different states. And they kind of control community feedback regarding the points and how sort of the meta is adjusting and if it actually needs a bit of a shake up due to some cards being played more than others or being underpointed or overpointed. So when I refer to points, 7-point Highlander, I believe, doesn't have a banned list. It just is based off a point system. So you can have up to 7 points of cards within your deck. So something like Time Walk is 5 points, something like Snapcaster Mage is 1 point, and then something like Birthing Pod is 1 point. You can actually go to 7ph.com.au, 7-point Highlander, which has the points list there. I think it's really popular because you can be really creative with how you manage your points. Are you going to have 7 1-pointed cards, or are you going to have like a Time Walk and a 2 card, like a Dig Through Time or something? So there are some archetypes that are pretty well fleshed out. Decks like Bug Control, a lot of mid-range decks are really popular. Rug for a long time was really, really popular because you could have Time Walk and Ancestral Recall in the same deck. And I think another big push for it was that Vintage is still a pretty loved format in Australia, but there's less events. So if people can use their power in other formats like Highlander, then they're pretty pretty appealed by it.
I remember, I think my really only experience with Canadian Highlander is the last time we all went to a GP, I think. There was a Canadian Highlander event, probably set up along the same way as you're talking about these 7-point Highlander games getting set up. And Chad kept coming to me and being like, you got to come watch these games. You got to come watch these games. And I finally made it over just to watch him get like strip mine locked 2 games in a row, like fast bond strip mine and like, you know, crucible or whatever. And it was just, that's everything that happened. And I mean, I loved it. Chad wasn't very happy, but I imagine the same kind of things get put together here.
Yeah. One big difference between Canadian Highlander and 7-point Australian Highlander is that Australian is just 60 cards with a 15 card sideboard. And I believe Canadian is 100 cards.
That's right. Yeah. 100 card singleton.
Yeah. And just on top of the point system, it is vintage ban list.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Most Moxon are around 3 points.
Yeah. And that was actually something just like on a even more tangential point. We're doing a little 7-point old school league. Well, it's basically 7-point Highlander in old school. And the Moxon are 3 points there as well. But they're actually talking about potentially shifting some of them down to 2 points because like a Moxon really no one plays them because they're 3 points. Random question. Do people actually play Moxon or do they just like stack up on 2 and 1 point cards instead?
I think because of scarcity, not as many people play Moxon as they like, but there's definitely some decks that are very different without them. Highlander Goblins is a really good deck, especially if you have Mox Ruby. Elves is a fantastic deck that I believe plays Mox Emerald. There's a few like Tinker decks that might play Lotus. And there's also a deck called Brain Freeze, which I believe some guys in Brisbane built, which is cool, which uses Underworld Breach and... it's called Slushy. It's called... they're going to kill me on this. It's called Slush Puppy because it gives you a Brain Freeze. So it's a Brain Freeze Underworld Breach deck. Yep, that I believe plays LED, not Lotus, but I'm sure there's a version that could if you did have access to one.
What do you play?
I'm a big fan of Blue Moon, just blue-red control. No combo finish, no like, no twin, no madcap experiment, just classic, like Young Pyromancer, Gush, Snapcaster Mage, Blood Moon, back to basics. And then also bug control. I mean, right now, obviously Simic is pretty powered. So if you can start off a deck with like Oko, Uro, Leovold, Sylvan Library, Icefang Coatl, Baleful Strix, there's just a lot of powerful cards within the bug kind of archetype right now.
Yes. Uro's not even pointed. That's disgusting.
Oko's 2 points. He's up there with Mind Twist.
Yeah, so Oko was a recent change. So we moved up from 1 point to 2.
Should be somewhere else with Mind Twist.
Yeah, Mind Twist is a very interesting one.
I like that those,
Mind Twist, but
those decks you play are like, at one hand, very different than what you play in Legacy, but on the other hand, kind of similar in the same world, right? Like everybody's slinging Moxes and Time Walks and you're kind of, you know, fair control getting them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Blue Moon definitely has restrictions to it that stop your opponent doing things that they probably want to be doing, which is really nice. And yeah, it feels good to see the frustration of your opponent who just can't be like a Snapcaster Mage that's beating down for 2 a turn. Yeah, there's Hate Bears as well. Hate Bears is pretty dominant. There's a green-white version, and I believe there's a mono white or a white-red version of sort of D&T. But I would say that if you're playing Legacy, there isn't a deck in Highlander that wouldn't appeal to you. You'd be able to find something that's like, hey, this is actually pretty close to what I'm already doing.
Even lands?
Lands is massive, yeah. We call it Gardening Australia.
Gardening Australia.
I believe that was named after the gardening show. Yeah, and I believe it was actually made by Jacob Richards, who is a Brisbane-based player, back in the early 2000s, which is very cool.
Okay. I just Googled Gardening Australia. This guy looks awesome.
I can assure you that's probably not Jacob.
It's like live-action Hermitdruid.
I actually was curious, like just jumping back to Legacy for a moment. I was really curious, like what the Legacy scene was like or how it evolved and like where the maybe most recent peak was. I know when I was just doing a bit of Google searching, first starting with geography, and really realizing like how far some of your cities are apart. But
you missed the pre-show geography discussion.
Yeah. I was just like, how far is it from Brisbane to here? Oh, like 7 hours? Jesus. But they were like Canadian distances, which I appreciated. But from a legacy perspective, I was just looking up for like some old tournament results from Australia. And I think I saw Eternal, like an Eternal weekend something in like 2013 was the oldest result I could find. And then I saw a lot of chatter around 2015 of like so many people playing and like all this going on. So I was just curious if there's like when things really picked up and then how things have continued on until we get up to COVID.
Yeah, I reckon 2015, 2016 was kind of the peak. There's a lot of interest. Prices weren't too high. People were just really liking that Legacy was firing with really good numbers each week. And there was a bit of hype around trying to break like 40 players, which we never did. But yeah, we had players driving from Gympie, which is I think 2.5 hour drives after work, and then 2.5 hours back just to play Legacy, like crazy, but very cool, like power to them. Yeah, I think just from a community base as well, the community has been really supportive in all states. If someone needs a card or a deck, there's always someone who has a spare deck or has access to the cards, which is really nice. And I think just it's kind of an older format as well in regards to just the people that play it. So, you know, everyone knows what other people are going through when it comes to like commitments or like family or things on weekends. But the downfall is an interesting one because it's always hard to put a finger on it. But I would say that it is just that group of people moving on and, you know, buying a house or selling out to support your family or just, you know, not finding the time because of your family. I would say that a little bit is because of the format. I know that DRS was a huge buster for a lot of people. But yeah, it's...
Talking about the weeklies... Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I think the most populated night we had at the weekly was the after Top was banned. That day was just insane. There were so many people there. Did you guys have a similar explosion?
We had a fair few Top players, so I'm not sure if we saw a decline. But yeah, I mean, those are two big ones. Like, there's always going to be bannings in formats, but I feel like Top and DRS were really defining in like how it changed the people that came to tournaments and the people that stuck with the format.
Mm-hmm.
But like we had a winner duel event a few weeks ago, and Louis took it down with like a really just old school blue white miracles kind of list. So he's obviously a guy that's just stuck with the deck because he loves the deck, and that's worked out. So that's always cool to see because it does show that just because a card gets banned doesn't mean you have to stop playing the deck that you really like and enjoy. But yeah, the only big shift was moving to a different store that just naturally happened. But yeah, I think we've been very fortunate with COVID. I think we had 2 weeks of lockdown where the store wasn't open and maybe 2 weeks of wearing a mask in store, and the rest has just been business as usual.
And that's it. Just
yeah.
Like, wow. I knew you guys were like outperforming everybody, but I didn't know it was quite like that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Melbourne down south was pretty bad for a few months, mm-hmm. but even they are coming back to weekly paper magic, which is awesome.
That's awesome.
I'm so jealous.
Thinking about holding a card in my hand and like looking not at just, someone at the same time. And I'm like,
not just putting it up to the webcam. Like this is it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Even during the 2 weeks of lockdown, I was like, I'll be in meetings at home and I'll be just like shuffling a deck on the side. Like just the feeling of shuffling was so good.
Now you're just going to get us all depressed. Like,
I apologize.
So about you in that legacy scene, I guess. So obviously to us, and I think to everybody, you're known as a maverick person, perhaps the maverick person. I guess I think it's between probably you and what Matt Vuk would be the likely guesses. I'm probably butchering his last name.
No, all good. Yeah, Matt Vuk is a really good player. I think he had some really good finishes with four color loam on the SCG circuit. But then you have like Achilles Connolly, who does really well. Dan Neely, who's taken some time with his family, but always put up really good results. Like Dreadnought 33, John O'Yannick.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of really good Maverick players that unfortunately right now just have either turned away from the game for a little bit, or maybe switched decks. I know Achilles is playing a lot of Vintage at the moment, but yeah, I was actually a D&T guy. I was the D&T guy in Brisbane.
Yes.
Which is really cool. So I played D&T when I got into the format in 2013. And then I played it up until just after GP Shizuoka. I went there in 2018, I'm going to say, or maybe that was 2019. I think it was 2018. And then after that, I kind of got over the amount of local hate for me. So cards like Dread of Night, which I actually have a full 360 binder of 360 Dread of Knights because I bought everyone out, even like Card Kingdom, because I didn't want people to get them.
I love this because I remember a night like at this point, probably a year or two ago. And I think Phil, the local guy, was around. He's like, I can't find any Dread of Knights for this tournament. Now we know who to thank.
Nice. It's a great feeling. So yeah, Maverick was kind of cool because it played different cards and wasn't blown out by a card like Dread of Knight. And then I guess for work, I work in SEO for a company. And to build out my skills, they were pretty happy for me to build a site and see how it performs and work on my own site. So I chose to do a Magic-related one, and the Green Sun Zenith was born.
So for you going to Maverick, was it really just like, I am completely sick of Dread of Knight? And it's like, well, I have these Noble Hierarchs sitting here, and this Knight of the Reliquary looks nice.
Yeah, I felt like I probably had a lot more to achieve with D&T, but I definitely felt pretty good with the deck. So I thought it would be cool to change face and see how the other decks performed, because there were some nights where I'd play around with like a green splash for like Tegan, like Sylvan Library and Choke in D&T, but it never really worked out because of the consistency. So the thought of Green Sun Zenith just really pulled me in, and yeah, it was awesome. I really like the variety you get by being able to splash whatever colors you want and get some pretty good benefits from all of them.
I think just in the last month, I've seen you play like Naya and Bant, I think, recently. And yeah, being able to switch between those, or like, you know, what we think of locally as typical with the black, is a really big boon. I know Colin loves blowing everybody out with Zealous Persecution.
Nice. Yeah, Zealous is a sweet card, especially from the board, especially against decks that have multiple creatures at X ones, like Esper Vile. Plague Engineer is fine, but there's a lot of times where you're just like, I kind of wish this was Zealous Persecution because I could get like four creatures here.
Yeah, Colin is, I've always known Colin as like the guy who can like read the whole metagame for like the local scene and then like craft his Maverick deck to just shit on everyone. Like it's amazing the flexibility that the deck offers when you know what your target audience is.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know that Yaskul, I believe he came on the Green Sun Zenith for an article. And he's got some really good results, especially locally. I think he won, you guys mentioned in a previous podcast about like how you track your local tournament finishes and how he came in like the top three maybe overall for a period of time.
It's definitely up there. And he also, I think the last year we were doing Paper Magic, beat me more than anybody, I think by a wide margin.
Yeah,
I was going to say there's a lot of people running in the race to beat Jeff because like he's so easy to beat. But Colin definitely, maybe it was just like the matchup lottery and he got to.
We just got paired more often.
Yeah. But yeah, like don't think he's like the end boss or anything.
Yeah, I never meant to give off that impression. So 2021. Magic, 2020 Magic as a whole, playing Maverick. What choices are you making to try to combat the, you know, summation of everything that's occurred in the last few years? It's nice playing Maverick. You can kind of adopt some of it yourself and play, you know, you could play the Scourge if you wanted to.
Yeah, definitely. I think Bant Maverick is a good example of that, of where Oko is pretty powerful, especially in a deck where you can power it out turn two, even on the draw, which is pretty cool. But as a whole, I think that most Maverick players have been looking for two things. One, flexibility in what their cards can achieve. And two is probably just value. So being able to deal with an opponent's permanent, but having your opponent have to deal with your own. So something like Vraska Golgari Queen is kind of a Nick Fix sort of idea. But I think Vraska is pretty cool because it's actually, it's probably Abzan's best answer to Oko because it deals with Oko, but then sticks around for other value. So it either makes your opponent deal with it with another card, which is where you really want to be, or can just win the game on its own, which is kind of cool. So like another example might be Plague Engineer, where in some matchups where you don't want to use your Swords to Plowshares on Ice Fink Waddles, you can name Plague, you can name Snake on Plague Engineer and try to fight them on that axis, where you're obviously trying to 2-for-1 your opponent, because I think Maverick historically has been a really good 1-for-1 trading deck. But with so many decks out right now that have so many 2-for-1s or 3-for-1s with Plague Engineer, it's really tough to keep up if you're just trying to play the traditional route of 1-for-1 sort of answers.
I like how when Jeff kind of crafted like how we wanted to ask you a couple of questions, he had this whole like pre-COVID, post-COVID, but it sounds like that was really just compressed down into like a spring break, like in terms of time frame. And like our entire world has been, you know, lockdown central and everything's been controlled and we're not going to get any paper magic for quite a while. And there's going to be all this pent up demand, but it sounds like it's just kind of like you're saying business as usual. And it's the kind of normal constraints of people getting older, people's life priorities changing, maybe some cards getting more expensive, but it sounds like it's just business as usual. I was kind of curious, like when you're talking about people getting older back in like maybe 2 or 3 years ago, like what was the average age of your community when you had like 30 people showing up and stuff like that every night or every week?
I would say probably still just like mid 20s to early 30s with a few in the late 30s, maybe early 40s. I don't want to say because I think I believe they were just late 30s. But yeah, a few of those guys have moved on. Even just, you know, moving away from the city or even a few times out, because there was a stretch where the Tuesday nights did start kind of just not hitting numbers. And I think a lot of the players with families and other commitments didn't like the idea of sort of Tuesday night rolling around, them spending, you know, half an hour to get into the store, waiting 15 minutes, no one rocks up, and another half an hour back home, and then that's their night over. So I guess a little thing that we actually did to support that is now I post every week a poll with the different nights of Legacy, and people get to show what nights they're going so that you can look at that and see in advance, like, hey, this actually is going to fire, so I'll rock up. But yeah, I think that... If anything, the age has probably gone down a little bit with a few newcomers, but yeah, still around that late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. From the price perspective, we've obviously seen a lot of like craziness in prices recently, and how much of that is actually like real and how much of that is just a flash in the pan remains to be seen. But, from the people who have been getting into Legacy and you've been giving out low-enter decks and stuff like that, do you have any, and it sounds like you're quite innovative with coming up with little things to help the community. Do you have any like suggestions for just general communities to help grow their Legacy or recover from COVID and grow their Legacy?
Yeah, that's a good question. I know that for 7-Point Highland is a great example. So the store on the Gold Coast, shout out to Damo and Jamie and Good Games Gold Coast. They actually wanted to start doing Highlander, but because of the area, the price barrier to entry, they did like a proxy night for point cards. And they had like 25 players on their first night, which is awesome. And I know it's a little bit tough because sometimes you can and cannot do that, but I think that can really help, even if they're not official events. And then also just getting in front of people and saying, hey, you play Modern, you might like this deck in Legacy. We have a guy who lends a stick out. If you want to come in and play, you're more than happy to. Yeah, I think it's just making sure that people know that Legacy is happening, because I think there is that the Legacy is dead kind of format thought. But I think in a lot of places, it's completely the opposite right now, where people are just dying to get out and play.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I really like your idea of kind of having that little poll. Like for a while, we were trying to get a second store firing on a different weeknight in Vancouver. And it was really difficult to like get it rolling. It took like months and months of like, because you'd have exactly that where like some people would, to use your term, rock up. And like there would be two people there and they're like, oh, what the hell is this? And then the next night there'd be like 12 people there. Like the next week. And it's just like that consistency. And like you get burned once or twice and it's really hard to convince people to come back. So I really love that idea of kind of almost having that little marketing component to it.
Yeah, it's tough. Like I love to support stores as much as possible. So I'd love to see more stores doing it. But at the same time, personally, I would love to see a weekly event with 16 players than two events a week with 8 players.
100%. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, we were in that spot where it's like you had 20, 25 people and then we were just trying to get another one going and it was like a consistent 8. But you always had these people who would show up and I would ask them, I'm like, so why are you here and not at the other one? And it was like, oh, I have work or school or like the trains don't work for me that night and like I just can't get there in time. Like sometimes the travel time is too long. And yeah. We had flirted with like 3 rounds versus 4 rounds for a long time. People liked 4 rounds because you get more legacy when you show up, but it means that the night has to start earlier, which is a tension as well. Really, it's just a challenge, but yeah.
Is there one city or town in Canada that's very well known for their Eternal scene? Like if I was going to move somewhere in Canada just to play Legacy, is there a town you'd recommend?
So I think maybe I'll let Jeff say this, but like to your point at the beginning, when you kind of just rattled off your entire country's, well, basically your entire country's legacy scene and all the different provinces, that is not our experience. Like for the most part, we like go and rock up down in Washington State and we'll do like cross border stuff. But like going across the mountains and over to Calgary or over to Toronto or something like that, like often the population centers are so far apart that it's that much more challenging.
I do know that like Toronto has bigger weeklies. Like, so Toronto is like the biggest city in Canada by population. And just by virtue of that, they have like a pretty healthy scene. And I actually used to have to go to Montreal, which is also across the other side of the country almost for work. And I actually showed up to draft at a face-to-face, which is kind of like Canada's Star City Games or Channel Fireball. And the face-to-face had like 30 people for draft and like 35 people for legacy. And I remember just like looking and being like, I should have brought my deck. Like I had no idea. And I was talking to some of the guys and being like, you know, like, is this normal? And they're like, yeah, it's kind of slow today because the weather's shitty. It's like, okay, good to know. So I think Montreal or Toronto, if you were actually thinking about moving to Canada, if you don't speak French, it's hard to get certain jobs. And so probably Toronto would be, I think, the way to go. Oui, oui.
You got it.
That's enough.
You're hired.
That's it.
Montreal, you can exist speaking English. Everyone's actually like, there's a lot of, if you're born in Montreal, most people are like fully bilingual. But there's just like a requirement for like a lot of office jobs that you also know French. But if you like roll up into like face to face or face à face, you'll get the classic Montreal bonjour, hello, and then they'll just respond cool. Depending on how you respond.
Very cool. I will say as well, I think because Highland is getting so popular and it's a singleton event, you have a lot of players who are appealing towards like selling out of their duels except for one copy and just making sure they play their monthly Highlander event instead of Legacy, because obviously prices are pretty high right now. And a lot of the old players bought in when things were, you know, a little bit more acceptable.
Yeah, there's definitely an amount, like there's an element of like you get older and theoretically have a little bit more disposable income to buy more cards. But it feels like there's definitely some asset inflation and it's really getting away from people. But the idea of the Highlander and only having to have like one Tundra, I know that's a high measure for Jeff, who like took years to get his Tundra, but to only have to get a couple of the key cards is pretty nice. And then to have all the flexibility.
Definitely. I know that CBR MTG and I believe Angus from CBR MTG and Isaac from an auction house are doing some MTGO freeform Highlander events, which are free to enter right now. And first place gets a revised Underground Sea, which is pretty sweet.
So on Magic Online, you get a revised Underground Sea?
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's open. I believe it would be open to anyone that wants to play. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if you wanted to check out like the 7-Point Highlander Facebook group or the Discord, you could find information about it.
That's sick.
But, yeah, really cool. Really cool to see prizes like that come up because it's obviously cards that are keeping people out of playing maybe a deck that they like that has blue-black in it.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have Underground Sea in it, but I am looking at the 7-Point Jund lands deck right now and it does look pretty spicy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You get your old boy Renin Six in there and Strip Mine and Exploration. It's great.
Yeah, I would say one of the most popular green creatures in Highlander is Titania.
Oh, hell yeah. Titania rules.
Is it, not to get too far into finance, but is there much variation in like card pricing? So like we're so close to the States, there's exchange, but beyond exchange, it's like basically like you just pay whatever the American price is plus the exchange rate.
Yeah, it's really weird. Australia has some interesting choices when it comes to pricing. So like for the Facebook groups, most people just go SCG 1-for-1. So if it's 700 USD on SCG, it's 700 AUD, which can hurt a little bit, especially when the Australian price is like 70 cents. So usually you'll see some sellers saying 1-to-1, but converted. But you could easily get, sort of like 30% off if you're just going for 1-for-1 stuff, which a lot of players do go for, which can be rough as well for stores because they obviously can't keep up with just 1-for-1 with like SCG or Card Kingdom. But a lot of these Facebook groups that are selling cards can go off it. And it's weird. I feel like it's kind of frowned upon to ask for converted, even though it makes sense. But usually if you do, you're not going to do it as well if you just do unconverted.
I think it's kind of the same in our Facebook groups too. You always see, SCG, no conversion or whatever. Just straight across. Yeah, which is easier. Nobody wants to do math. Nobody wants to be like, oh, well, the exchange rate, according to me, is, $1.16.
Exactly. I really don't like it when people post like a list of cards with nothing except for like SCG exchange, SCG 1-for-1 converted minus 30%. It's like, what? Just put the price of the card you want. I'm sure you'll sell a lot more cards if you do that than make the actual purchaser do the conversion for you.
Maybe it's so, like you're legally obligated to list your cards for sale, but you don't want anybody to buy them.
Yeah. It's for insurance purposes. I think we've found a solution though. When I look at the Australian dollar versus the Canadian dollar, it is actually 1-for-1, like almost perfectly to 2 decimal points. So
what I remember from traveling to Australia, it's like the dollar is worth the same amount, but everything's more expensive.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Is it actually 2 decimal points? Is that close? That's crazy.
It's 1.02 Australian dollars to 1 Canadian dollar. Yeah, nice. It seems to be fluctuating.
I always see that Australians and Canadians have a lot in common.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I heard you guys are good people.
Thank you. Thank you.
We can
sorry.
Do a circular backpack or backpack here.
Yeah. Yeah. We can also like complain about real estate prices of both dual lands and real estate in real life.
We can talk about the Queen.
Yeah.
Talk about the Queen.
Can talk about the Queen.
I did enjoy it. Was almost refreshing when you were like, oh, provinces and like different holidays and things like that. Or I guess it's states, but
yeah.
Yeah. There was a certain amount of like Commonwealth refreshingness to it, though, I have to say.
Yeah, definitely.
Here, this is a transition for you. Is there an old school scene in Australia?
You'll find a few players within Eternal Scenes that do enjoy playing it. I wouldn't say there's like a weekly meetup. Mm-hmm. But I know that like if you go to a GP or an Eternal Weekend, you'll probably find people who aren't local that are also playing it which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, I know there's a pre-modern. Pre-modern's getting pretty popular.
I have to ask for McBain. What about Alice?
Well, no. Just to be fair, I have. I did recently, like last month, play in a like online pre-modern event, which I found quite enjoyable. It was totally different than other formats, and it definitely reminded me of like the early 2000s standard and extended formats, which was cool. Yeah. So fast forward 10 years, do you feel that Eternal formats is going to be like, do you think Australian Highlander is going to be the predominant one?
Yeah, I think it will be. I think it will be probably a fair amount ahead of other formats just because you do need the single cards for it. And it's a great competitive tournament. There's a lot of CEDH in Brisbane, and I think a lot of those players are starting to look at 7-point Highlander as another really cool way to play competitive singleton without kind of losing every turn on, you know, before turn four.
And just so I'm clear, that it's 60 cards and there's no sideboards or anything like that, or is there sideboards?
Yeah, there's a 15 card sideboard.
Okay. So it's, yeah, it's totally constructed, just single point singleton constructed. Okay.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, very cool.
Huh.
Clearly we need more of an education on our side of Canadian Highlander so we can have some kind of, you know, battle of the Highlander minds here. But I don't think any of us know anything about Canadian Highlander.
I think like even knowing it's like 100 cards, like moving from like 100 to 60 with the sideboard, like the, like there's still a lot more variance than if you can have like four copies or something, but it kind of condenses it down into like a meta that's like a little more predictable, you know, or a gameplay that's a little more predictable, like, which to me kind of starts to hit a sweet spot. And then there's that, like that budget aspect, you know, when I look at, you know, my mitt full of Lion's Eye diamonds, and then I look at MTG Goldfish, like what if I could only had to own one? That's wouldn't be the worst thing.
Yeah. You can play Doomsday in Legacy, and then you can also buy all these other cards. It's great. Now, if you had gun to your head, random question here.
It's our guest.
Do it.
If you had to play a combo deck, what combo deck are you picking up in Legacy and why?
I have Ant and Paper. I really enjoy Ooh. Ant.
A
thinking man.
So you can put all those... the Dreadanites, you have like four in your sideboard. You can put them.
Just go with the Maskers.
Yeah.
Maskers where it's at. yeah, I guess it would probably be Ant. Show and Tell is also a good one. I think if I was going to a big event and someone said play a combo deck, I'd probably play Show and Tell just because the games can be pretty quick. You don't have too much of your opponent is talking about. And actually, as I talk about this, all of those answers are now at the door because the answer is Dark Depths, 100%.
I'll McBain feel this year.
Honestly, like I've played Dark Depths a couple times, and I'm just never drawn to it in the same way I'm drawn to lands. Like I like that prisony element. Dark Depths feels like you're just like waiting to sucker punch them, and you're just like trying to line up like the right moment to sucker punch them.
Oh, that's the best part though. When they think they have like the Swords of Plowshares or the Caracas, and you're just like, not of this world. And then you have the second not of this world. Ugh.
It does feel like it would be like the ultimate like big brain, right? Like you're preparing all of these counters and you're just, all right, like I'm punching the button now and I've built up everything I need to beat what you're trying to do. And you just, you know, out galaxy brain them.
I could see that being your combo deck of choice as well, Jeff, for that reason.
There is a beauty of, in Merrillage, I mean, this is for lands too, just being a 20/20, you're like, yeah, I'm going to attack once and it's going to end the game. Either I lose or I'm winning.
Yeah. I do, again, prefer the, instead of sucker punching them, just like the chokehold on the ground until they pass out. Like, or if you're really backed into the corner, you can sucker punch them. But it's, they're like, again, Jeff, to your point, there is a certain like, niceness of just the 2020 and being able to like end it when you need to end it.
Sometimes it's okay to not go to time. I'm just going to throw that out there. I get to eat lunch at tournaments and I love it.
That's fair. Yeah,
would you say that LANs is a lot different to pilot on MTGO than it is on paper?
In a way, like they're both challenging. It's a really weird deck to play. Like if you haven't played it in a while, it's kind of like you have to like morph your brain around to it again. But online, it's definitely consuming, especially when you start to do like the longer drawn out, like Punishing Fire loops and stuff like that. I got really, really good at managing my clock on Magic Online and like had all the stops off and like F6ing as much as I could because like you have so many game actions. Whereas in real life, you can like shortcut a lot easier just in the way like you pick up your cards with like your loam and just like you don't even put it into your hand and you're just recasting the loam. There's a lot of ways that you can shortcut it, but it's a totally different deck than like pretty much everything else in Legacy, which is something I enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people would see that coming into the format and be like, how is this deck still in Legacy? Like it's lands and a few like spells, like you don't really understand it until you play against it. You're like, oh, okay.
Oh, I don't have any lands and my spells cost 2 more to cast. I see. Interesting. Tabernacle does what now? Yeah, it's, I enjoy the ones where you, like, it's similar to honestly some of the fair decks like Maverick or D&T, where you have to like really have a game plan identified to be like, I need to have a hand that looks like this and I need to do these things because this is what really matters and like everything else is incidental at that point. But yeah, I really enjoy it.
I think lands is probably one of my favorite matchups with Maverick for enjoyability reasons. And we had a local Alan who used to always play lands. And I never knew if he was playing Ancient Tomb every week. So knowing if I could like play around the crop into Ancient Tomb to go off with Dark Depths was something I had to do. And I just always played around it because he showed it to me at least once. And I was like, okay, well, now we're going to take that into consideration as well.
I feel that like having played Colin a number of times, I feel that like it's an abysmal matchup for lands. Like once you get a knight online, there's just like so many puzzle pieces that you can stack up on top of things that like I can't get out from underneath things. And there's so many like random like Ramunap excavators or something that you could bust out that just end my day. And
yeah,
like the only times that I've ever really been successful is when I have those like explosive dump your entire hand game turn ones at beating Colin. Every other time he just like prisons you out. And you're like, I'm supposed to be the prison player. This isn't fair.
Yeah, I do feel like Maverick definitely has the upper hand. Even with like Mana Acceleration is really nice. If I can get around your like fast ports, they're the ones that hurt.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think if I had to pick like a fairer matchup to like play against all day, I think it would be D&T. Like, to me, that is a very intricate matchup. And like, I know Jeff, you and I have played many a lands versus D&T.
It always feels the most like fencing out of anything else, right? You're constantly like, you know, grappling for a little bit more control, or you each trying to plan 2 steps ahead. And yeah, it's a tough matchup.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of where I really felt.
go ahead.
I was going to say, sorry. That was definitely one of the matchups where I felt Turn 1 Vile was so much different than any other deck because the games are so different without Vile.
Yeah. And like you need that because otherwise, like, you know, you're like, well, I have the pieces in my hand, but I'm never getting a chance to cast them. Or there's random hands you have where like you actually need your Caracas for like mana and you're like, oh God.
Yep.
But 100%. Like the matchups where both people kind of look at it and go, oh, those are my favorite matchups to play where like both sides are like, is it a good matchup? Is it a bad matchup? And you're just like, both sides are just like, I guess it's bad. But like, those are always the most intricate and fun to me.
Yeah. No one wins. Yeah. I've definitely been in a number of like higher level events or GP events where I'm like my opponent's like planes, like Mother of Ruins. And I just pause and I was like, okay, I'm going to try and play as fast as I can. Jokes aside. And like, I hope that you do as well. So that, like, because we are going to go to game three and it's going to go to time because these decks just crash into each other. But it's great Magic.
This is why we have Quinn finishing his matches quickly to go get us lunch while we're out there slogging it out. Game one in 50 minutes.
Show and tell, invigorate. There's a lot of cards you can use to speed up your matches.
Well, I'm really excited to hear that there's such a thriving Eternal scene in Australia, and specifically like this, like where you have like Adelaide, Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney, all with their own communities, and then you get all this cross mingling and like the whole like playing before the GP and having like the top three and the top six and stuff. That sounds wild. And
yeah,
I'm insanely jealous. That's really cool.
Yeah, is it like so cool?
Is it really driven by like what's the kind of like structure that kind of moves this all forward, and how does it communicate? You said that there was like different states have one or two members, or could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so we have a Facebook group just with, I think, six of us from six different states that play in these events. And if like an Eternal Weekend's coming up, we might post some ideas about, you know, we're going to run this at this state. Are there any big events that we're not thinking about when we're using this weekend? Do you think you guys will get numbers from these states? Will some of your key players come? And then just when GPs were rolling around, it was getting ready for that. Okay, it's been playing in Melbourne this year. Let's find an LGS. Let's go for there for the Friday night. Make sure we have judges, where we're going to get beers after. It's always a big one. but yeah, I think it's just communication. I think there's a lot of really good people in the Legacy community in Australia that are happy to talk about anything, take feedback, and just try to like get more people playing. Because that's what you want. That's what every player wants, especially in Legacy. You just want more people playing events so you can play.
Yeah, actually, so as a transition to talking about the Boreal Community Cup that we played in last weekend for Old School, I was actually invited to just a group like that almost like 4 months ago, honestly, to get this all kind of set up. And I guess like I didn't realize it at the time, but it was exactly that, where you're just like get a couple of the community leaders from each of the different clubs or states or just regions where it's being played, and get those people talking, because those are the ones who can kind of like bang the drum and get more numbers to come up. And I think that's a great idea. I don't think that's something that we really do in Canada across different regions. There's not that kind of close-knit group of, you know, seven or eight people that are their community respective leaders that kind of push things forward. I think that's a really great way to do it, honestly. And leads to a lot of one, either good communication, and then also like the people who just get to show up and tag along, like they're not doing all the hard work and it's easy for them, but they get to have a great time and it kind of grows the community. So I think that's really awesome.
Yeah. Especially when it's built around a GP, that if it's not in your state, you're obviously traveling with friends, but there have been times where I've met some people on a Friday and then I'll just be walking around a GP by myself and they'll like say hey and like, hey, do you want to get lunch? It's like, yeah, cool, let's go get lunch and talk Magic or just talk something, which is cool because like you wouldn't otherwise have that opportunity. You wouldn't have the icebreaker of the Friday Night Legacy.
Hmm. That's really cool. Well, something to take away.
I'm so jealous.
Like that. Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
We just need to like shuffle some cards here right now. That's why Quinn has his mic off. He's just shuffling cards, trying to get the intro.
Nice.
So maybe just to jump into the Boreal thing quickly, because we wanted to talk about this, but we talked about it a few episodes, the Boreal Community Cup, but it was a number of different Old School groups from across Canada. And then there was the outsider group, which was anyone but Canada. And each of us played in it. There was a special incentive to play your respective club community card in your Old School deck. And you got more points for your club at that point. Ours is the Vancouver Grizzly Bears. So we had to play Grizzly Bears in our deck. We didn't have to, but everyone did.
I guess, should we also explain very briefly the context between the name Vancouver Grizzly Bears? Because I guess if you're not really from around here, you wouldn't know that Vancouver had an NBA team for How long? Not very long.
It's like 5 or 6 years, I guess.
Yeah, the Vancouver Grizzlies. So we've co-opted the name and part of the logo.
Yeah. So we each played in it. We each played different decks. I'll just go first because I'm talking and I'm not going to hand it off to Quinn like I always do. I just played like a kind of like a counter burn blue red control deck, splashing black for Demonic Tutor and Mind Twist because it's really good. I definitely cast many, many Demonic Tutors. But I kind of built the deck wrong and I just didn't put the right mana base in it. So I kept randomly resolving my one Blood Moon in my deck and then just like getting screwed on mana. So the tournament didn't go very well for me, but I had a great time. My opponents were phenomenal. Jeff, how was the event for you? I know you signed up at the last possible second.
I definitely thought I had more time than I did, so I signed up the last possible second, which meant that I didn't have a different deck built, so I just played my trusty mono green. It also means that I never went to Stronghold to get the actual cards I needed, like Grizzly Bears. So I played with one very nice Grizzly Bear from the tournament we did a while ago, and then three proxy Grizzly Bears, which I got my wife to draw for me. I don't know. I ended the tournament as a Spitting Slug, so not that bad. Nice 2-4. Quinn?
Running with my same mindset that I take into Legacy, I played Mono Red. My record was like 3-3, but I got through my matches very fast.
Nice.
And, you know, got to shoot the shit with some people from like around the country and in the States as well. I think, speaking of time, in the interest of time, Dugs was kind enough to join us during his work day. and actually has a meeting to go to. So I was actually going to suggest that we push it along. I'm going to try and resolve a show and tell and put that gas into play. That's all right.
Nice. Thanks, guys.
So for anyone who doesn't know, that's gas is just how we end the show on a positive note, just to shout out someone, something. McBain has done the most things instead of people. I don't know what that says about him. But just to celebrate kind of things going on in Magic. Dugues, I'm putting you on the spot here, but as a guest, would you like to go first?
Yeah, cool. Okay. I've got three people to go for that's gas. The first one is Jacob Richards, who is the guy that got me into Magic. The second is Angus Mackay from CBR MTG for getting me into content creation and being open to all questions at any time of the hour. and then Nick C from MTG Mate, who was the first sponsor of Dugues on Twitch, an Australian store. So those three are, yeah, big gas.
He's a natural.
Jeff, you want to go next?
Yeah, I wanted to shout out probably for the fourth time. I haven't been keeping track recently, but a friend of the show, Rob Cross, used up a nice... he was playing in the old school tournament. I'm losing my train of thought horribly. He had a good wizarding day set aside. You know, wife takes the kid. He had some cheese pizza, which he hasn't had in forever, and played an absolute pile in this tournament. It was like black-white butts with the, you know, Toronto totem of the brass man and like what, flying scimitar, pestilence, kumbage witches, that spell I've never heard of that pumps something's toughness equal to its converted mana cost, and like old school version of like about face. I don't know. I think he went 0-5 and dropped to get pizza or something, but man, what a legend. That is a beautiful pile of cards.
He did get the Spice Award for the well spiciest deserved. Deck of everyone. Yeah. So well deserved, Rob. And he had a nice, lovely playset of beta pestilences in his deck, which are kind of the glue that held everything together. And that card looks especially nice in beta or alpha. I'll go next and then I'll let you end it, Quinn. I got two people I actually wanted to shout out here. So first of all, Patrick is gas. Patrick was the one who really spearheaded the Boreal Community Cup. He ran the Twitch all day. He did the pairings on the back end. He really just kind of did all the organization. And having like been part of that little special group that you were talking about, Dukes, of like the people who really do all the heavy lifting, I was just amazed at how much work went into it over like a 4-month period to have just one day of really well-run, flawless tournament. So big, big hat off to Patrick. We'll link in the show notes a commercial, like a 4 or 5 minute commercial little music video that he did that was like basically this culmination of everything from the 90s and
Canadian 90s television.
The Canadian 90s television. So maybe to acquaint yourself, Dukes, you can go watch it afterwards, but it's pretty phenomenal.
100%. I'm going to show the people in my meeting.
Yeah, just open it up. No like context or anything. Like, hey guys, I got this really cool thing to show you. And then the next one is Colin Whitwell, or also known as Rascal Yote, as we were kind of alluding to him earlier. Really the true Maverick master, no offense, but he is a godfather of the Maverick deck and will annihilate any given metagame if he knows if he really wants to beat it. It's actually his birthday today, like as we're recording. So big special that's gas for Colin. And we'll link his little article that him and yourself did on Green Sun Zenith in the show notes as well.
Nice. Quinn? I believe if you wanted to Green Sun Zenith for him today, it would be X equals 29.
We'll have to confirm that, but I believe that is true.
That's great.
It's a, you know, you have a cradle.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got Cradle, you got like...
It's 29, man. That's fine.
Yeah.
You can tick up with Nyssa Vital Force to untap the Cradle.
There we go. There you go. I was like, you can't like bounce it in any way. Like,
We also have a Carpet of Flowers in play, so...
Just a couple carpets. Carpet, hell of a card. I don't want to get into Carpet of Flowers, though. I did want to say that my Boreal Cup opponents in general were all gas. I want to give a special shout out to Andrew, who's Shorv, and I think the old school Discord and the Canadian old school Discord, who was my first round opponent, played a lot of jewelry and then time twisted me all to hell in our game one. But also, while he was doing that, said, "Hey, man, are you Quinn from the Canadian Threshold? Really love the podcast." And I was like, "Thank you. I have no lands in hand now." so shout out to Shorv. Gentlemen, anything before we wrap up?
That's it for me, but dudes, you got anything you want to plug? List out your doings.
I was gonna say you guys first. It's been awesome being on here. I love you guys.
Thank you.
I listen a lot to the Canadian Threshold when I'm writing up my articles, because I find like if you listen to people who are really into something, then it inspires you as well. So big props to you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
But yeah, you can find me on Twitch at Dukes on Twitch. You can find me on YouTube, which I've been trying to push. I'm pretty close to getting monetized, which is nice. So I think I've been trying to do YouTube exclusive content each week now. And then just the greensunzenith.com, which I usually try to get out 2 articles a month. I've started doing some matchup analysis with big names. So I did the last one was with Rich Cowley on Rug Dolva, which is cool. Keep playing Legacy.
That's really the best advice we can hope for.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the truth of it.
Yeah, right. I'm a huge proponent of the matchup analysis. Like if I'm ever getting into a new deck or like trying to learn something, the first thing I need to do is like, what's the blueprint for the matchup? So being able to go to a resource like yours and really truly understand it from both someone like yourself who really knows what you're doing, but then also like someone like Rich Cowley who can really explain like the context from the other side. I think that's invaluable and is way more like, I would rather do that than play like a day straight of the matchup to like really kind of like bash my head against the wall and think I know what's going on. Like Legacy is more complex than that. And you really have to kind of stand on the shoulders of people who have put in the time and energy. So way to go there. And I'll just have like one final note that like people often ask about like, do we have a Patreon or something like that? honestly, like
I'm getting enamored with requests. Everybody wants to
I would point to like some people like yourselves who have Patreon who are doing great work. And if you want to support the legacy community, support people like yourselves who are really putting the time and effort into to putting out great content. So way to go.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Quinn, if people were looking to follow you for Canadian political content, where could they find you on Twitter?
I'm at Quinn Omari on Twitter. Usually I tweet my magic stuff at Canadian Thresh, though, which is our shared Twitter. McBain, where can they find you?
At Servant Painter on Twitter.
And Jeff?
Always impressed. At Jeff DKK.
All right. Once again, Dukes, thank you again for joining us. It has been a pleasure, my man. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you again in Two Thresholds.
To a big planeswalker, cosmic imposter, and a still run logo too.